coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the other host of the show, the Jedi Cole Houston.
I am here, of course.
He is there, of course. Tonight, we are joined by a very special guest. Cole, would you do me the honor of telling everybody who's with us tonight, and why, for that matter?
Oh, absolutely. Tonight, we have a perennial, periodic, occasional guest who we're always thrilled to have on the show, none other than my great friend Steve McCauley. Thank you for joining us, Steve.
Howdy, guys.
God, I love it when Steve's on because it makes my work so much easier.
I know. It's like Steve actually actively reads comics.
Oh.
So he helps us look like we know what we're talking about.
He still reads comics, I know, right?
Yeah.
Still read comics.
Steve
to
still
the chagrin
reads
of my mom. I still read comics.
Well, and to my personal joy, because every night between you and Andrew, I get like, here are the things I need to be reading.
True.
I don't always follow through, but I do my dead level best. but it's because of Steve that I discovered Fables and the two of you Saga. I'm like, damn you.
Yeah, we're good for that. We're good for that. We're like your war cabinet. Will you keep us under
That's
your
right.
hat? Or in your pants.
Your socks, my pantaloons.
Whichever way you want to take it. So why did you call your cabinet here tonight, Cole? What is going on here?
Tonight we're going to harken back to a comic that had kind of unique origins because it was one of the earliest and subsequently one of the last of its kind and then became a proper monthly title.
Right.
But we're going to harken back to the time when the Marvel graphic novel series was a thing. And to my knowledge, that was where the term graphic novel was coined, or at least the first time I remember seeing it. So for all intents and purposes, that's when it happened.
What's funny about that is the term graphic novel has become Kleenexed in terms of anytime you go buy a collected of anything, it's referred to as a graphic novel. So if I go buy a collected five-issue, it's a graphic novel. Go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry.
It seems to be a more high-tone way of saying I read comics.
Exactly. If you buy a graphic novel, it has both the words graphic and novel, each of which lend a level of sophistication that would be otherwise lacking to many. But I also want to point out that when I buy a collected edition, I'm a bit of a stickler, Mr. Meeseeks, in that I absolutely insist on calling them a trade paperback.
Oh, yeah. God.
The trade.
Or trade, yeah.
I'm just going to buy the trade. How much was milk when you bought your last trade?
It was a shiny quarter.
That's right. So, yeah, the graphic novel, the Marvel graphic novel, included such luminary titles as, what was it, Elric, Dreadstar, Cole's,
that's right.
Cole's Within Reach, God Loves Man Kills, Star Slammers, Walt Simonson's Star Slammers.
Oh, wow, the source of an argument amongst kids in Long Shot number one.
No, Star Slammers is Star Jammers.
No, it's the Star Slammers. Are we still hurting from this? I don't know. Maybe.
Dazzler the Movie. Do you remember Dazzler
the
Movie?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. Written by none other than Jim Shooter himself in 1984. Oh. Yes. Yes. Oh, that's so good.
So, yeah, of course, the very first one that kicked it all off was the death of Captain Marvel. That was the very giant-sized graphic novel that Marvel published, and I think that's where they should have stayed with some of these, is a big event comics.
That was the precedent you thought was being set.
Exactly.
And then you got God Loves Man Kills, you've got the New Mutants. It seemed like, yeah, that's what it was supposed to be. And then it just turned into a dumping ground.
Agreed.
Yeah,
especially with the, you know, beautiful Bernie Wrightson art and the otherwise forgettable Spider-Man hooky, which I think, I personally thought it was hooky for the longest.
Hooky.
I didn't realize they were talking about, like, playing hooky. I thought they were, it was like, you know, it had all this weird Bernie Wrightson morphing creature thing going on the cover, and I thought that maybe that was the hooky.
I forgot. Speaking of Bernie Wrightson, I know this isn't our topic tonight, but I forgot.
Twice we do this.
We do it every show, Cole. I don't know why this is a surprise. I went through. I was doing some crate digging over the weekend and dug up all of my old Marvel Presents Weapon X, the run of the Weapon X Marvel Presents comics, which are Bernie Wrightson art. And I forgot what an amazing no, that's Barry Windsor Smith. I'm not thinking
that's
of
Barry Windsor Smith.
Never mind, my
Barry
brain Windsor went away for a second. I'm back now. Bernie Wrightson's great too. Shut up. But I was gonna tie Windsor Smith to Sienkiewicz, and then we were gonna go down that rabbit hole, but we'll do that later. But tonight we talk about the fourth of the Marvel graphic novels, The New Mutants. So, Cole, what's the title of this issue?
The title of this issue, ironically, is the fourth of the Marvel graphic novels, The New Mutants. Now, this is
wow.
That damn Joel McHale joke's over here.
Nailed it, Andy.
You did, man. You just knocked it out of the park. Seriously, this is HKC Team Up number 10, The New Mutants.
Otherwise known as I'm Nigh Invulnerable When I'm Blasted.
Oh, yes, indeed. What did I tell you, Steve? What did I tell you?
He is nigh invulnerable when he's
blasting. When he's blasting.
Okay, so when you see that on paper, is there punctuation?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It is blasting.
No, but I mean,
apostrophe,
I mean,
no
just
G.
Because he was from coal country doesn't mean he was uneducated.
But is there... Is careful. You're close to home with that. Is there a hey? You guys got oil. We got coal. Is there a comma between I'm nigh invulnerable, comma when I'm blasted?
Oh. Well, Steve, I think you have it there.
This has to be a Mandela effect. I feel like this is a Mandela effect because I've never heard anybody say it without the comma. I've never heard anybody run it together.
Like, I'm pretty much invulnerable when I'm blasting.
Yeah, I'm not invulnerable when I'm blasting. Like the Micro Machines guy. But yes, we're going to talk about the New Mutants tonight. It is our team up. We have a weird thing for kids teams. Cole, have you noticed that?
I wouldn't say that.
I'm sorry, but it's true. I'm calling it what it is.
You know,
between the New Mutants and we keep talking about doing one on Power Pack. We just have a thing there. But, yeah, this is...
It's not what you think. It's like, in the words of Charles Xavier, it's not what you think. Or, okay, I'm paraphrasing, but shut up.
We are super punchy. So much is going to happen tonight. New Mutants. Basically, what had happened was, they decided they needed an X spinoff book because of the success of the X-Men. So
I think one of the reasons they did is because the X-Men had gotten so far away from its original concept.
Right.
That's true.
Which was a school for young mutants. And
yeah,
it hadn't been a school since, I don't know, in the issue
40. The charter members, effectively.
Yeah.
Since Krakatoa and...
even before that, when they all changed uniforms, when they got out of the blue and the black and gold... That was when they graduated from school.
So at that point, it was just creepy.
Yeah, then they're all still just living with an old man, a bald telepath.
It's some rich old man who collects children like some sort of overzealous Bruce Wayne.
I was going to say, is it Bruce Wayne? No, it's the other one. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No, this is like Bruce Wayne isn't rank amateur when it comes to...
That's true.
Taking young children from their family.
He built a machine to find children.
But so, and this is a Steve. I know you probably don't realize this, but this is a running theme on this show that this decision to do this spinoff to the New Mutants was made by none other than current, or I guess current for the time, EIC one Jim Shooter.
Yeah, correct.
Goddamn, Jim Shooter looked up from his Duran Duran State Fair mirror for a Coke and said, "You know, we need an X spinoff. That's what we need. We need an X spinoff." And what's funny was Louise Simonson, who was the X-Men editor, Wheezy, the editor of the X-Men, the X series, and Chris Claremont didn't want to touch it. They're like, no, we don't. We don't need that.
What had occurred, I read, was that while basically tapping out the lines of Coke, two of them crossed. And he just had this epiphany.
No, I think what really happened was Chris Claremont was in the room because the door was locked and he couldn't leave. And Jim took a giant, just a bump, like a speed bump rail of Coke, and looked up and made eye contact with Claremont and wouldn't let go of it and just said, just in the most serious voice ever, he said, "I'm nigh invulnerable when I'm snorting." And then Chris was like, "Wait, there's something here. I don't." Yeah, we are all about some Jim Shooter libel and slander.
Yeah, because that was basically where.
Let's make sure we all know that probably didn't happen that way, but we like to pretend that it did.
All right, Steve.
Because I like to see that he was, you know, as Andy described, imagines himself invulnerable, makes a run at Claremont. Claremont not only just completely lays him out, but also temporarily damages his snorting nostril.
Yeah, it's a shame. But I like what they did here. They said, "We're not going to make this a monthly title until we're fairly sure it would be a successful monthly title. So why don't we make it a graphic novel and see what happens?" And it was successful.
Certainly a shrewd way to introduce a handful of new X characters into the realm without having to interrupt the current continuity.
Yep.
Without having to bank on a new title. And the thing about it is, if the graphic novel concept had failed, you've got five new characters you can bring into the adventures of the existing X-Men.
True.
Yeah. You start building that army of mutants that end up screwing everything up about 10 years later.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was the first step, wasn't it? I mean, you had the X-Men were riding high after the Dark Phoenix saga and with the return of Dave Cockrum to the title and then Paul Smith. The X-Men title was really taking off.
Right.
And it made a lot of sense to do a spinoff. I really liked the fact that in this graphic novel they used the current continuity in the X-Men to justify making a brand new team. Very similar to Sudden Genesis, the X-Men, Giant Size X-Men number one. Where the all new X-Men had to be recruited to save the old X-Men.
Right.
In current X-Men continuity, as of the New Mutants graphic novel, the X-Men had all been sent to space, and Xavier, for all he knew, they were dead.
Right. No. Yeah. So there was nobody there.
Right.
So, you know, what do you do when your students are presumed dead is you go out and just start scraping together another young group of
Well, what else is he going to do? He's a professor.
Yeah, that's true. And then, you know, that way later they can buy.
He's himself a professor.
I just realized, Steve, that has become – and I don't know if anybody has a reference point, an anchor – prior to this instance, I guess prior to the you know, the all new, all different X-Men, the giant size one, right? I guess prior to that, this has become such a huge trope in comics the idea that your team has either been captured or they're missing or they're presumed dead or maybe they are dead and you go out the next day and just recruit a whole new team has become such a trope in comics.
Interesting, because Doom Patrol basically did that as well.
Yep.
Even though, and the two teams are often compared.
Oh, that's true.
Since they came out relatively around the same time, the original Doom Patrol and the original X-Men. But that exact same thing happened, where the team gets killed, and Niles Calder goes out. Now, it's much, much later in continuity.
Yeah.
Where he, you know, scraped together Robot Man and then went and found a whole new team.
Who wrote that? Steve, who wrote that?
I'm not sure. Was it Len Wein?
No, I know. When did that happen? Who wrote that? Because it happened twice, I think.
Yeah, it did happen again.
I want you to say the name. Say it. Somebody say his name. If you don't say his name, I'll never shut up, Cole. Grant Morrison. Somebody say Grant Morrison.
I should have known, yes.
No. So the Grant Morrison stuff happened again.
Yeah, it happened again with the Grant Morrison stuff.
But the Doom Patrol that I'm talking about was actually like a – it appeared in like Showcase or something like that late 70s, early 80s. And it had Tempest and
– Oh, yes. And they had like some punk rock guy in it.
I'm not sure. Okay. We're getting off topic. Sorry.
There's
sorry,
no
sorry.
Topic. There is no topic. But yes. So they like Steve was saying, they folded it into normal continuity, right? So you didn't have any heroes. I do have a side question for you that is tangentially related to the New Mutants. And maybe somebody can answer this. I've got, you know, wise scholars. I surround myself with wise scholars tonight. When did Charles Xavier decide that calling it a school for gifted youngsters was a bad idea and change it? Because it feels like that went on way too long.
I don't know. Has he changed it?
Oh, God. He has to have, right? Because it's gross. He has to have changed it.
Well, I think that's part of – it illustrates the level to which Charles Xavier is one of the most powerful mutants in the world.
Continue,
is that he is capable of putting a giant brass plaque on the gate of his institution that says School for Gifted Youngsters.
It's true. It's true. And nobody bats an eye. Like,
yeah, so if you look at it through that lens, it's perfectly natural. As far as you've been led to believe.
I love so my we'll get to it, but my favorite storyline, my favorite New Mutant storyline is Demon Bear. Like, my favorite self-contained New Mutant storyline is the Demon Bear. But my one of my favorite parts of Demon Bear is kind of later into the story, probably issue three, late issue four. It ends up with, I believe it ends up with, is it Cannonball in the hospital? Or is it, no, it's Mirage. It's Mirage ends up in the hospital. And the hospital in Westchester. Okay, so she's in Westchester in the hospital, and all the New Mutants are there, except for, you know, and
you were there, and Auntie M, and Slim, and Ben.
And the cop was there, and they tell the cop that they're from Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters, and the cop doesn't immediately call the FBI, I think it's the... is the most far-fetched thing about the Demon Bear saga. But yeah, so the original team consisted of Cannonball, otherwise known as Sam Guthrie, Karma, Mirage, Sunspot, and Wolfsbane. So what they did was they mirrored that new X-Men team with diversity, I think, was a go-to move for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
much like within the Giant Size X-Men/X-Men 94, where you really begin to punch up the diversity because the original X-Men.
They finally went international. They weren't a bunch of white kids from upper to middle class background.
Right. But you have Sam, who is I really don't know what his powers are. All I know is that
he's pretty much invulnerable when he's blasted.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thanks, Steve. I don't know what that
his
means.
His powers, he is able to fly at a high rate of speed, which is blasting.
Okay. Yeah.
And he has a force field that, for some reason, projects around him, so he's nigh invulnerable.
I like to think that the force field allows for aerodynamics to help him when he's blasting.
One of the really cool things, and I don't think we ever got this with even the original X-Men, is the fact that Cannonball really has no control over his powers. It's kind of like Cyclops, but he got control with the Ruby Quartz glasses and whatnot. But Sam, when he blasts, he was blasting in a straight line, and that's how he flew. He flew in a straight line. He could barely turn. But over time, as the character, you know, has been around for well over 30 years now, he can now turn, and I believe that
over time he started to be able to maneuver. But you're right, that's kind of why he was Cannonball. He was just about as effective as any sort of mortar or artillery shell that you point and shoot, and that you don't get to change your mind.
Wasn't that sort of the idea, the kind of hallmark of what they were doing was, I don't believe, you know, Wolfsbane had a lot of issues. We didn't even get to mentioning Wolfsbane, but Wolfsbane is the werewolf.
Yeah.
But she that had can some, go from girl to half wolf, half girl to full wolf.
Right.
And she becomes an interesting character because she's like a very
staunch Catholic?
Yeah, very staunch Catholic, and is kind of terrified of her powers, and often admonishes the other teammates, didn't a blaspheme?
Very much the Nightcrawler of the team.
Yes.
Right. Sunspot, who has solar-powered super strength. I thought he had solar-powered super invulnerability, too, but apparently I was wrong.
No, he does not. But Daniel Acosta, is that his name?
Yes.
Yes, very good.
Robert Acosta.
Roberto da Costa. And from Brazil.
Yes.
So they would every now and then pepper some of his phrases with Portuguese. So.
Oh, that's right.
My personal favorite, Mirage, Danny Moonstar, illusionist, sometimes Valkyrie, Native American, just amazing. Because the thing is, we again didn't have we got stuff on this team that I don't think that we ever got. I don't know that I ever saw anybody from Kentucky. Number one, if you're gonna pick an Anglo, make him from Kentucky. You know, we got Vietnamese, we got Cheyenne, we got Brazilian, and we got Scotch on this original team. That's pretty rad. But Mirage is still underrepresented, the Native American or American Indian, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the parlance is at this point. But, you know, those characters are still wildly represented, more so back then, because the only one we got was an X-Men who died on his first
hour. Exactly.
I have never read this, but I always had it in the back of my mind that Mirage was added as a because he killed off Thunderbird. Claremont killed off Thunderbird. The second issue, he was writing the X-Men.
Exactly.
It just offed him.
It's almost penance for.
Right. And to my recollection, Thunderbird has never been brought back.
Not that character. His brother was brought back as Thunderbird too. Very near, probably around X-Men 193. Three, I think.
Okay.
With the Hellions.
Yes.
The
yes.
Other team of New Mutants that the Hellfire Club put together.
Right. Right.
At the Emma Frost School for Gifted Youngsters.
Oh my God! It was. I mean, there were like 12 teams of gifted youngsters running around at some point. It was like a summer camp. It's like Weeblos. Out there somewhere. But yeah, so that's basically Enkarma, who was the team leader, who basically had the power of, like, body hop.
She could possess another person. And she was actually introduced in, I think it was in a Fantastic Four annual.
Really?
That they brought in, I think it, yes, they brought in the X-Men at the very end, or Charles Xavier. And so that annual had come out years before.
Interesting. I did not realize. So I love those sorts of things.
They finally, I guess they finally said, okay, now we can introduce her here or have her be here. But Claremont obviously didn't like the character because in sixth issue, she was gone.
Yeah, yeah. She made it through the graphic novel and the, and six issues, right? And that was it, I believe.
And we thought she was, at that point, we thought she was dead.
Oh, man. I want to talk for a second, if it's okay with you guys. We've talked about Claremont, you know, a little bit now. I don't think that Claremont needs too much dwelling because, you know, he strides mightily across the X universe, you know, with his, you know, like a titan. But Bob McLeod was the original.
Babyface Bob McLeod?
Babyface Bob McLeod was the original artist. And
that's Bob Layton, by the way, was Babyface. But anyway.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Damn it, Steve. Why do we keep asking? It makes us look bad, Cole.
No. I wish we had knew less about comics than us.
But you, Cole, you had a really interesting insight when we were talking about the Titans and the Teen Titans. And that was, you get an artist that can draw, a lot of artists draw children or teenagers as small adults.
John Byrne.
John Byrne.
Hey.
But it takes a very
any of the Legion of Superheroes. Sorry.
Just tiny, fully articulated adults, action figures. But it takes a very special type of artist to be able to draw children. And I think McLeod does that. Is that
absolutely?
Yeah.
That was one of the big selling points for me. When we first started getting this, of course, it being an X-Men tie-in didn't hurt either, but
right.
I thought the art was awesome. And to have Bob McLeod actually drawing, penciling, and inking was really amazing.
In the comics world, they call that the Lord's work. Just the trifecta of the whole thing. But he also worked on at least the new Titans. So he has sort of that history of working on, you know, either kids or adolescents in some respect and doing it well. Because it takes, you know, Cole made that assertion during that show, and it struck me that that's absolutely correct. Like, there's just something off-putting about an artist who can't draw children but can draw tiny adults. And then the opposite of that being somebody who really understands the physiology of what that looks like and how to draw that and how it moves. And that's really cool, and he does that for sure. Oh, man. Yeah, so, but...
Can we talk a bit really quick about the powers, the power set
that
is brought
can.
Together here? Because Wolfsbane works. He's basically a transformer, you know, or a shapeshifter. A very limited level shapeshifter. So in a way, she's akin to, say, Mystique, only all she can ever achieve is a wolf. And, you know, psychologically that bothers her because she is like becomes the embodiment of the werewolf. And I think, didn't down the line the wolf aspect become troublesome?
Well, I can tell you that you're being really offensive to what was it not? What did they decide that she was?
You're thinking of Team Edward.
I'm thinking of when they decided that Wolverine comes from an offshoot of Homo sapien that was like Canis sapien or Homo Canis or whatever
Homo
that
Canis,
is.
I think was what it was.
Oh, dear Lord.
And she was one of that offshoot along with Wild Child and Sabretooth.
Oh,
and
ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, that group. Was all an offshoot of the same race. So I think you need to be a little more inclusive, Cole. This is a modern show.
Effectively, by doing that, they not only undermine decades of continuity, But effectively, I have to get on the soapbox. I know I've done it before.
Let's go.
Namor as the quote-unquote first mutant doesn't work because unlike all other mutants who are evolved from Homo sapien, a.k.a. normal human beings, Namor is half normal human being and half Atlantean.
Every other show. It's awesome. Yeah, but Cole.
By doing this, Marvel's first mutant.
Yeah, effectively. Wolverine is no longer a mutant.
Well, no, he still has the healing ability.
No, yeah, but he has maybe mutant among Canis Lupus people. Wolfie boys.
Is that with an I-Z? Tell me it's with an I-Z.
Like the Care Bears or the X-Men of teddy bears.
What about Wolverine? What about Werewolf by Night? Is he also a member?
No, he's a straight-up werewolf.
Well, I think it's just sort of married in.
Because I think that the... No, because wasn't it, Steven...
What about Man-Wolf?
Oh, no, no.
Sorry.
No, he's a man... he's a man first. But I think that's what I wanted to ask. Do you remember if the reveal was... And I don't know... Like, we talked before the show that we kind of get up to that relaunch of New Mutants and then we can't remember a damn thing or don't know what we're talking about. But
yeah.
I think that there was a reveal that the wolf form was her original form and that she was it wasn't that she transformed into a wolf.
It was a wolf
transformed into the girl. And that's why you were saying that the wolf part was such a problem was because she was trying to hold the reverse form. Does that make sense? I mean, doesn't make sense, but does that make sense?
You know, see, that's the problem with those kind of retrofitting things. It was like it basically completely undermines and is just a big FU to the creators. You know, one of the most brilliant characters in Marvel's pantheon is Puck from Alpha Flight.
Oh, no.
As presented by John Byrne.
Agreed.
And then all of a sudden, after Byrne's out of the way, we got to haul off and say Puck is some sort of weird genie-possessed immortal BS. And, you know, Aurora and Northstar are separated twins who are both mutants whose powers have a complementary aspect whenever they first meet. And from then forward, whenever they touch. But, oh, no, they're not really mutants. They're fairy children from the land of Munchkins, or some BS like that.
I think they even retconned that retcon.
Oh, thank God. It just,
because I think somebody actually took a look at it and went, so Northstar is gay and a fairy?
That's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. How can he truly be said to be gay if the rules don't apply to non-humans?
This is a whole show, Steve. We just could, you know, pull Cole back like one of those cars that you have to pull back to rev up and then let go. Just
have you done an Alpha Flight show?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And what's wrong with it?
In fact, Alpha Flight. No, that was before we started doing the team ups. It was just simply called Marvel's Great White North.
Ah.
E. Yeah, we had some back bacon and some donuts and some beer. And we talked about Alpha Flight, eh?
But this is the easiest thing to get him riled up about right now.
Oh, I mean, it actually, as bone claws go, Northstar is he actually worse than bone claws?
You feel like he's worse than
I bone feel claws? Like that's worse than bone claws.
Wow. All right, so let's move through. We got the initial group. Right.
Okay, but I do want to talk real quick about the power set, because I sort of led with Wolvesbane, Mirage, Karma, great powers, really unique, nice use of very singular mutant powers that ultimately become complementary to the teammates. Basically, Sam Guthrie, Cannonball gives you that, you know, I got to figure out how to control this, how to make it more feasible. In many ways, becomes the Cyclops of the group.
Sure.
Sunspot. Okay. The problem that I have with Sunspot from the graphic novel to this very day is that we are admonished that he is, when he's powered up and has the power of the dark side of the sun, that he is incredibly super strong, but has zero invulnerability.
Well, he's got to have some invulnerability.
Yeah, that was the problem, is there has to be some, because he does things like smash entire redwood trees apart.
Right, but I don't
Every
think he could stop
single
a
bone in his arm and hand would have been shattered. He would have been like Mr. Glass would be like, oh man, I got off easy.
Cole, okay, is it fair for me to say I was trying to set you up for this by talking about his invulnerability earlier, and I was really hoping you would sink your teeth into it and run with it then, but I'm glad you came around to it. I really am.
Ugh. Yeah, he's obviously got to have a modicum of invulnerability, at least.
Yeah,
while
there
using
has
his power.
Something in there, but that was always the problematic thing, is they were trying to, you know, create this sort of vulnerability. And I'll give you, you know, you can't just like walk up. You can walk up to him and shoot him with a gun, and you'd be like, you know, Scott Evil, bang, dead. I will allow that, but I cannot allow that, you know, he can do some of the things he does, especially those involving smashing.
I don't agree.
Without some invulnerability.
I don't agree with the term modicum of invulnerability. When it comes to him, because he, like you said, if you take that much, do we have to do physics again? We just did physics like last night. But if you take a fist and punch a tree as hard as you can, and you're super strong, and you destroy a tree, you got to be kind of invulnerable not to break every bone in your hand, right? Like, more than just basically like, oh yeah, he can, he's Captain America strong. You know, like, no, this is big time. Am I wrong in that assumption?
No, he's more like Colossus strong. I think we've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
He's Colossus strong, but Captain America invulnerable, as I think what I'm getting at. Like, he has to be Colossus invulnerable and Colossus strong. I think that the two have to go hand in hand. I
would agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But they don't, and I think that's the problem. It's a problem we all have, is that they do not go hand in hand.
Exactly.
After McCloud comes what is my favorite period in the New Mutants lexicon, which is the point at which Bill Sienkiewicz takes over.
Well, you had a little bit of some transition. Sal Buscema for their Obushima.
How do you pronounce it?
Both. I do it both.
Okay.
I think it's Buscema.
Okay.
But the issues in which we lose Karma,
right,
off the team, is actually the continuation of a canceled Team America comic book.
Wow.
What?
So that's why Team America is there, to sort of reveal that, because they had this black writer that would show up and nobody knew what it was. Well, the comic got canceled. So to finish that storyline, they had them appear in New Mutants and had it be a mutant. From the team. So that's actually two of my least favorite issues ever. I was like, I don't want to see about Team America?
What?
I want to see more mutants. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. It's funny, on the last issue we were talking about the Micronauts as by way of example of one of the successes of a toy based comic.
Oh yeah.
And Team America
there for a while, but yeah.
Based on Team America BMX, by the way.
Correct.
Is a great example of the opposite end of that tragic rainbow.
What about Crystar?
Hey. There are two things I hold sacred, Mr. McCauley. One is Crystar, and the other is Sektars. You got to kind of watch your
Oh, I knew Sektars had to follow.
I got a velvet glove with a giant articulated plastic spider on top with your name on it.
I think there were two toys that actually worked in the Marvel. It was ROM. Space Knight, and the Micronauts.
You're in good company.
I think all the others were fly by night. And anyway, so back to the news.
So yeah, you had Sal. I did not know that about Team America. That's amazing to me. That's really cool.
Yeah, and actually to have that be the one also, you know, that it's a little two-issue arc that ties up some of the threads from the Team America comic that had been canceled.
Okay.
Well, I guess it was US 1. Was that the one that had been canceled? I'm fixing things up now.
The Black Rider was from VH1.
VH1?
But US 1 also got canceled, I think, after the first issue.
They all got canceled. Let's just... none of them made it. US 1, though, that's a pretty... that's a deep cut. But I really... Like I said, the Sienkiewicz period is my favorite period in the New Mutants. And it's some of my favorite comics of all time. There's something about that art... In that strange watercolor, over the top, almost non-linear fashion, especially once we get into things like Demon Bear, where he's really expressing dimensions, expressing transitions from one dimension to another, or expressing that really spoke to me when I picked it up and started reading it, and I said, this is for me. This is the same thing that. You know.
There's an irony here because I think, Steve, didn't you tell me earlier today that this was your breaking point?
Really?
Yeah, breaking
exactly.
off point?
I, after a few issues of Inertia, okay. The Bill Sienkiewicz stuff, I think it was probably the Cloak and Dagger issues where I was like, I don't recognize any of these characters.
Okay. No, I can,
and
yeah, I can see that.
And the Demon Bear, I had totally forgotten about issue 3. I think by this point, which actually introduced the Demon Bear.
Right.
But it looked totally different when Bob McLeod drew Demon Bear than when Bill Sienkiewicz drew Demon Bear.
It's true.
So that I didn't understand, like one of the scenes you talked about earlier where I think it was Danny that was in the hospital and they had the cop and the nurse and they get turned into Indians and I you know, by being... stabbed by the Demon Bear, and it was too far removed from where the comic had started.
Yeah,
and
especially
I left the comic until I think it started crossing over with all the damn mutant massacre and the extinction agenda and all the different
mutant massacre.
So the mutant massacre.
Did you come back right around the time of? You know, the Cypher magic that...
Now, see, at that point, you're bringing in... Oh, God, who was it that was drawing? Was it... I want to say Will Smith or Kevin Smith, but that's not it.
No, I don't think it was Will and or Kevin Smith.
Well, I don't know if it was Bert. Brett Blevins, I think, was drawing it by the time I came back.
Okay.
And the students were all out of the golden and or the yellow and black outfits. And were in their own uniforms, which I thought looked terrible.
Well, in fact, I remember there was an issue where they weren't quite graduation level, but they broke into Xavier's bedroom or something, and they found the Hope chest. But they went ahead and donned their graduation costumes.
Which were on some incredibly articulated mannequins. That's amazing.
Yeah. With lots of strange... Anyway.
They weren't moving, but they seemed to whisper, "Help me."
That's right. It's amazing the power of the mind when you...
Yeah, so between I guess, the issues... that we started with, and then before Sienkiewicz, they added Magma, Cypher, or Doug Ramsey, I guess. I don't know if he had a name yet.
Yeah, at that time, he was just Doug Ramsey. In fact, Magma, liquid hot
magma.
The most powerful mutant in the Marvel Universe is Doug Ramsey, and then just nobody has done it right. I'll stand by that.
You have said that often, and I actually kind of agree to a degree that he has a rather remarkable power. I think back in the day I was complaining about Cypher, a.k.a. Doug Ramsey, a.k.a. Doug Locke, times.
Yeah. Duglok coming out of Asgard Wars. Go ahead.
I was talking to Steve about, you know, like, what a stupid power. And I don't know if you even remember this, but you said, do you realize how powerful he is and that, like, mathematics?
Yeah.
And all written and expressed languages and so many, you know, I guess physics even, to extrapolate further. The guy could be like a freaking genius. And they actually utilized that.
I think, yeah, but one of the problems they had with it is they actually had him go on mission.
Yes.
He should have been the guy in the chair. to take a line from Spider-Man Homecoming. He should have been their oracle.
Yeah, no, you are correct, sir. You are absolutely correct.
But an incredible, I thought it was an incredible power. Thinking about it now, it's more like magic than it is anything else. Because I can't think of a way that a mutant power would be able to have you pick up a language very, very rapidly, unless it's telepathy and you're talking to somebody. But he was able to do it just by reading stuff.
Yeah.
So, then there was also Ileana Rasputin, magic.
Yes.
Well, she starts out with her steppin' discs. She's like stepping out with the steppin' discs.
A teleportation disc. That teleports you to limbo and back again.
And was she like involved, was it with Belasco, or was she with involved with Nightcrawler's dad, or
no?
It was Belasco.
It was Belasco.
Yeah,
and of course and Sim.
S-Y-S. Oh gosh, I forgot about Sin. And also the other neat thing was that you know, we were talking about Danny Moonstar Mirage earlier. She and Ileana both kind of enhanced what God gave them.
Yeah.
With push-up bras?
Well, that too, but especially Danny, because, you know, she was not,
not
she
much
wasn't
the
blessed, and the demon bear did not bless her with honkers.
Oh, my God.
But,
sorry.
One of the really neat things was what was, like, the X-Men. That's right.
That's the least offensive thing we've said.
Yes, exactly. But how was it? I forget what the title was, but where they all went to Asgard.
It was the Asgard Wars, dog.
Asgard Wars. Okay, that's what I didn't want to say.
My favorite Marvel comic of all time, because it's the weirdest shit ever. Literally, here's a bunch of structural engineers. Oh, now Loki's got them, and now they're Asgardians. And they have the power to build this giant magic city in the middle of, like, Nebraska. Oh, it's so weird. Sorry. I can talk about it for a
I think year. It was Alaska.
It was.
Not Nebraska.
It was Alaska. Damn it,
but,
Steve.
You know, but she, like, goes...
in Canada, though. Somewhere in Canada.
Yeah.
Was it? You're right.
But they go to Asgard, and she comes home with, like... a Thor crest and a giant ass sword and a freaking Pegasus and, like,
yeah, blind horse.
Yep.
Nobody else got anything.
Well,
but there was some stuff with Doug,
yeah,
where he was like, you know, being it's like being in the movie Phenomenon, where he like learned the entire Norse language and probably even picked up some of the Groot language while he was perusing their textbooks.
Well, like, he was a rock
star. Because it was
an
elective.
Oh, that's one of the reasons I think I like this, is because he was a rock star.
Yeah.
When he was in Asgard, he was a rock star, because he knew everything. He could know everything. And they didn't necessarily have that, so he was like, yeah, I'll just hang out here with these Skrulls all day and just do my thing. That's such a cool book. It was such a giant crossover, cool ass thing to have happen. It was completely out of left field and made no sense to have happen. You know, why have your three major X teams crossover with
mm-hmm.
Loki and Asgard was just such a bizarre Twix to eat. that it just made sense. Like, I absolutely adored it. But I'm not going to go on because we've gone on.
I really, really do like that set of issues. Not least which, because I think Art Adams did both the...
That's the name I was trying to think of. I don't know where.
And the New Mutant Special Edition and the X-Men Annual for that year, which is where the stories from X-Men Alpha Flight then crossed over into the New Mutants and X-Men, the Annual and the Special Edition. So I loved that art. I thought Warlock never looked better.
Oh yeah, yeah. Art Adams took Warlock and made
and
it
turned
work.
Him into Plastic Man.
So, yes.
Right.
Pretty much. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah.
Well, and I think it was the best. First of all, Art Adams, you can't do wrong with that with that kind of. But I think it was the best version of all three teams. And when I say the best version, I don't mean the best characters or whatever. I think they got to be their best during that arc. You know,
yeah.
You weren't really dealing with a lot of character flaws. You got to be heroes. And I think that was, you know, because it was high fantasy. And I think that was the coolest thing for me to read was you know, her going off and becoming a Valkyrie.
Mm-hmm.
Like an actual real Valkyrie. And then going back after Hela to fight Hela with her new Valkyrie powers. Like, that stuff's just so cool to me. It was just such a great book. So I won't stand on that for too long, but that's... For me, that's one of my favorite Marvel books. We move out of that period. It gets the book gets turned over to Louise Simonson, and now we get into your Burt Blevins's, Steve, and then we start getting into the Exterminators, and couple of long-standing Exterminators though that have been around for a while and are still around. Boom Boom being one. Rusty Collins, my favorite mixed drink. Richter and Skids. I don't remember. I remember a bunch about Richter, right?
I remember them from X Factor because I was in and out at this point.
Okay.
I do remember Richter and Skids from X Factor because I did read that. And I think one of the reasons you see them show up here. I think they were created by Louise Simonson for X Factor.
Okay.
That makes good sense. That makes good sense.
Rusty Collins, I think, was in the actual first issue of X Factor. He's the one, the sailor that accidentally set a whore on fire.
Wow.
Because he got all excited.
Now,
that's not unlike the latest member of the Muggerville 7.
Oh, no.
Who's Muggerville's first openly homosexual hero?
Oh, no. It's a bad idea.
Burning Man?
No, damn it. I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. Oh, God. You know what? We need to do talk at some point about Inferno, the crossover Inferno.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loves me some Inferno.
I was getting tired of it. So... Reading this at the time,
yes,
you had the Mutant Massacre, and I think that was something from on high that was like, there are too many mutants running around. We got the Morlocks. We got...
Oh, you know, yeah. The mutant inflation was really setting in, and not for the last time.
No. Oh, absolutely not. You know, somebody would throw a stick, and you'd hit a mutant. So...
Kiss my grits. Sorry.
Have,
Rusty
then
Collins.
Then you had the Fall of the Mutants.
Yeah.
And then Inferno. I did... The only problem I had with Inferno was all of the demon or the Goblin Queen stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
The Madeline Pryor clone. retcon.
Yeah. Yeah, clone of a clone of a sailor.
Clone of a demon of a phoenix of a cosmic entity.
Was the clone of a preacher, man.
Cole... Steve probably has already picked up on this, but Cole, Rusty Collins, right? Russell Collins, Fire Fist, Deadpool 2.
Oh my God, I would never have made that connection.
I've not seen Deadpool 2 yet, so sorry.
No, you're fine, but if you had, you would have picked up on it. But because you're more steeped in the lore than I think Cole and I are when it gets down this deep into... Rusty Collins, Fire Fist, that's who it is, Cole.
Yeah.
Damn it. Damn it. Are you kidding me? It was right there all along. I didn't see that anywhere.
Like, no, nobody's mentioned that or anything.
So, clicking on that name on Wikipedia, Rusty Collins, it actually says he appears in Deadpool 2.
Damn it.
Oh, wow. Damn it.
There it is.
So, it's much like the stuff we were talking about in the last issue about, you know, all these characters in Ant-Man and the Wasp, but you're just like, you don't, on that show, Steve, Andy had, we had to record it twice, but even the first time, I was schooled in the fact that Ghost's dad was Egghead.
Elias Starr.
Yeah, I figured that out.
And I did not make that connection.
I figured it out later. Like, I was like, could that be Egghead? I don't think it is, but it could be Egghead. And then I looked it up when I got home.
That's why I was saying, Steve, if you would have seen Deadpool 2, you would have picked it up.
I don't know. Rusty Collins, just from us talking about it, brought it back, but I didn't, I don't know that that name would have done anything for me. I would have probably thought he was from the Vacation series.
But that takes us up to Rob Liefeld, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we've run the gambit.
I want to point out, at this, as we reach this era of New Mutants, I'm long gone. I do remember, like, the big deal Rob Liefeld tiny, tiny, tiny feet cover of number 100, I believe it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they made this a huge-ass deal.
I think that was Fire Leg, huge ass.
Well, there's Water Leg, too. It's almost like Avatar the Last Airbender. You have the water legs, you have the fire legs.
And you got that guy from Crystar that was half molten lava and half crystalline.
That was Valence, wasn't it, Cole?
What was his name? No, Feldspar.
Yep. Yep. You're trying.
Feldspar,
you're trying to push buttons right now, but that's fine.
Between them.
I'll take it. I'll take it, and I'll go read my Crystar comics. I don't care.
I was trying to come up with that guy that was half cyborg in the Star Wars comic.
Oh, yeah, Valance. The droid-hating bounty hunter. The droid-hating cyborg.
Okay, sorry.
No, but that's okay. Okay, yeah.
It's all comics.
That's true.
So, Liefeld took over, apparently, doing the art, doing the pencils, and then doing some of the plotting, and the book skyrocketed. Keep in mind,
I have to say, I did jump back in when Liefeld took over.
Can I ask you why? I'm not being a dick.
At the time, it was so different and so dynamic. It was exactly the same reason I started picking up Amazing Spider-Man again when McFarlane was doing the art.
Okay.
He wasn't doing the storyline. And at the time, Louise was still doing the scripting.
Right.
So it still read like a New Mutants comic.
Okay.
But it was so with the introduction of Cable, you had no idea who he was.
Right.
Of course, you know, had a lot of pouches and big, giant, weird-looking guns. But yeah, the introduction of all these new characters that Liefeld had put in, I really did think it was pretty good. And then once it moved to X-Force,
right,
and there was no as far as I could tell, somebody backstopping Liefeld to do the scripting, I dropped that like a hot potato probably two or three issues in.
Was Cable then a creation of Louise Simonson, or was she a creation of Liefeld?
I believe it was Liefeld that put him in, or Liefeld.
Okay.
Liefeld. Because I really can't tell. Simonson was doing the scripting, but I think LaField was already doing, you know, plots and pencils.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he was also, you know, creating a lot of the characters, whether he wrote all of their adventures or not.
Well, the funniest thing in the research
and
is...
I think it wasn't Deadpool?
Yes.
Yeah.
98 or 99.
And nowhere near the Deadpool that we think of today.
No, actually prefer that Deadpool. That Deadpool and then the initial run of his solo comic, like the first 10 issues, were completely different than what we have now.
You know, I've read those two just recently because the only time I'd ever encountered him was in that issue of New Mutants, apparently.
Right.
And he was so forgettable there, I forgot about him.
Right.
And then I started seeing comics with him, and I was like, what is going on here? So I bought the trade not long ago, probably about 2 or 3 years ago, of the Deadpool, the first introduction. And I was like, he's just a low-rent Wolverine.
Sort of.
I mean, there's nothing that makes him unique in those first issues. I really like the way that they've taken, no offense at all meant, Andy, but I think it makes him unique to be crazy and breaking the fourth wall, and I really do like the way he's portrayed now.
I get that.
Not that I buy it.
Right. No, and I get that, and there are some instances now that I really like the character. There's a Spider-Man Deadpool crossover book that I really, really enjoy because the dynamic between the two of them works so well that it's really cool. There's some of the older Deadpool Cable stuff that I really like because they do a really good straight man, you know, Laurel and Hardy routine. It played right. It works really, really well, like it did in the movie. But for the most part, I have a pretty big issue with the not so much now. Okay, let's say 5 years ago. 5 years ago, up until maybe 6 years ago, till 3 years ago. I had a real big problem with just everything was break the fourth wall. Everything was you know, chimichanga this and nothing makes sense. Who cares? And I had a real issue with that. But they're sort of cycling back. But there was also no continuity to the character. So if you pick up a Spider-Man book where he was in like New Avengers, right? Or you picked up a Spider-Man book where he's in his own title, or you pick up a Spider-Man book where he's in whatever it is, right? Spider-Man is Spider-Man no matter what. If you picked up X-Force, one of the later X-Forces, if you get a completely different Deadpool than you do if you picked up his solo series. You get a much more serious, much more driven kind of Hawkeye or Green Arrow-esque character, where it was sort of the voice of the consciousness versus the goofy, dumb stuff. So I just want some consistency, that's all.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to the way the She-Hulk comic was. Whenever She-Hulk was not in her own comic, she was serious. And then in her own comic, she was silly.
Yeah, because of the editorial direction that Byrne wanted to take her. And
I think he even had her
that was an
on,
FF.
You know, in the Fantastic Four, at the same time that he was writing her.
Yeah, that's true. She was a little more able to let her hair down more than the other characters and be a little less serious about it.
Yeah, which at the time, you know, you and I both thought She-Hulk was a stupid concept.
Yes, absolutely.
Just talking about Cole at this point.
What you get
what
you get from getting a transfusion from your cousin who happens to be the Incredible Hulk is dead.
Right. Right. Doesn't it die in the process?
Yeah. we just thought the entire concept of having a She-Hulk. I mean, it's fine, but don't call her She-Hulk. That's just a stupid name, and I, you know, totally redid the character for me, having her in the FF. But
yes,
and made me really respect the character itself. Actually, made her a very well-rounded character. Of course, I think She-Hulk's one of the last characters Stan ever created.
Yeah,
for Marvel. Yeah,
You're right. I remember reading that somewhere at some point. But, okay, guys, we should probably wrap this up.
Yeah, we've talked some serious New Mutant stuff, and I got on my sunspot soapbox.
But I really like the last thing I wanted to close with, what I was saying was, so Louise and Rob were working on it, and then Bob, I guess, goes up to Louise and says, hey, listen, sales have really picked up since Rob's, you know, taken over the co-plotting and the penciling. We want him to take over whole hog. So you're not fired from the book.
Yeah.
But Rob's going to do everything. And she was like, no, I'm gonna go ahead and leave. You can let Rob do everything. just dumb. All right, that's Steve. Let's throw it to Steve for final thoughts. Steve, do you have any final thoughts on the New Mutants?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a nice beginning, with some middling middle and exciting end. But I in the end, the end of New Mutants, which moved into X-Force, was a big flash in the pan that I don't think held up to what had started at the very beginning of the New Mutants saga.
I agree. Cole, what do you think?
I see the thing is, from its humble beginnings, I loved the New Mutants. I loved the concept. The graphic novel was great. It was thrilling to see them get their own title. It got to be a little hit and miss. I forgot to mention that that earlier I was talking about Magma, that you know, them going and finding this sort of
yes, God, I what was it?
Kind of an Edgar Rice Burroughs lost empire.
Nova Roma. Yeah, the Roman civilization in South America, was it? Where was it?
Yeah.
And it turns out she was Amazon. Marvel's first Nova Roma mutant.
God. Cole, I'm going to push your buttons with this so often now. It's going to be so great. All right, Cole, what else do you got?
Well, we should go ahead and wrap everything up. We're, of course, coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. Be sure and check out my other exploits on DallasOnAir.com on the first and third Sundays of every month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central with the Randcore Pit Live with myself and Eddie Juan Medina. And also on the third Sundays of every month, preceding that from 9:30 to 10:30, my new show, Isle of Toys, the 11th episode just went live on Sunday last. So be sure and check that out on the third Sunday of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., where I just discover all manner of toys with a special guest each week, including one time in absentia, the Andrew Farmer.
In absentia. That's right. That's awesome. Steve, I don't know if you have anything to plug. Do you have anything to plug?
No. Cool. I just live my life, guys. I just live my life.
Just live your bliss, Steve. Just live that bliss. Thank you.
And do what you already do and buy, read, and collect, and enjoy your comics.
Yeah, thank you, Steve, for coming on and making
us. Yes, thanks for joining us.
Mouth breathers, we appreciate it. It's really great to have you guys on together. From my perspective, that you know, you guys have been friends for so long and have this rich history of sharing comic books, that we should all aspire to that. You know, as comic book fans, we should all aspire to that. And Steve, thank you for coming on the show so often and giving so much awesomeness to us. We appreciate that, for real.
It's a pleasure to be here, guys.
Oh, yeah. He's humble, too. I love that. He also isn't watching the Brady Bunch right now.
Yeah, like our prior guest who is watching Marsha get hit by a football in the face.
Marsha.
Tugboat Pollock over there watching Mama's Family while we're recording the podcast. All right. Buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Catch us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HK Comics Show. We love y'all, and we will catch you next week for more Hey Kids and the Comics.